This is Side Hustle with Luke and Omar. We'll explore what it takes to run a side hustle with talented individuals from different backgrounds and experiences. We will discuss things like taking the plunge, personal challenges, and the balancing act of maintaining a day job whilst side hustling to make the dream a reality. Now sit back, relax, as we talk to some of these amazing individuals. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Side Hustle with Luke and Omar. And this evening we have a special guest, Eddie Wang. How you doing?
That was all right. It was better than all right.
Obviously, I've got a bit of a reputation for not pronouncing people's name the right way, which is horrible to say. I mean, obviously, we're podcasters. The least I should do is actually pronounce people's names properly. But your one was a bit of a setup to fail, man.
Yeah.
Can you please pronounce it for us?
It's Eddie Wing.
Wing.
But, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's too hard. Like, okay. 99% of people who try to pronounce my name fail. So,
okay.
Yeah. No
pressure. Right. So, it's a good attempt, I guess.
Yeah.
Since we are talking about your last name, what is the meaning of it?
It actually has no meaning.
What do you mean? It's so hard to pronounce. It's got to have something behind it.
So, interesting story. The last king of Vietnam, his last name was Nguyen.
Okay.
And I guess in Vietnam, people just try to be relatives of the king.
Okay.
I guess so. Like, they just randomly take his last name.
Force themselves into a last name?
Yeah. So they sound like they're relatives of the king. So they would get better treatments from the governors and stuff like that. That's why more than half of Vietnamese have the same surname. And I'm pretty sure we're not related. Like, there's not one player, you know, up the tree somewhere where he has like tons of kids.
Wow. Luke, are you going to change your name to Trump or something?
For what?
Luke Trump?
For what?
Just so you can get treated like a president who's not very liked?
I don't understand the question.
That was a setup. Luke, how's your day going, man?
Day's been good. We had our first meetup for Jewel of Doves on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
It was like intimate and inspiring, and all weekend I've just been inspired, and today just continuing those thoughts, and I'm just looking forward to getting things moving.
Awesome. Eddie, thank you so much, man, for joining us on a gloomy Monday evening.
Well, pleasure is mine as well.
we've been meaning to get you on the podcast for a while, and I'm glad that all our schedules have aligned to get you on board. To start off with, are you able to kind of just introduce yourself in terms of your 9-to-5 and your side hustles and kind of what you're currently doing?
Yeah, sure. So right now I'm working as a software engineer, mainly in web applications. And at the moment, I'm also running a coffee shop with my brother. So that's my side hustles, and trying to look for other opportunities and see if I can marry the tech side and the business side of things.
Mm.
Yeah, awesome. So can you maybe tell us a little bit more about that coffee shop, because it is a bit of a well-known one.
Yeah. So it's Glory Jeans. So mm-hmm. I'm a franchisee.
Okay.
And I'm running this business with my brother and his wife. So there are three of us, I guess.
Okay. So given that obviously your main thing is full-time, I'm assuming your brother kind of takes care of the operations of the day-to-day of the Gloria Jeans franchise?
Yeah, that's right. We kind of split our responsibilities.
Okay.
My brother does the operations side of things. My sister-in-law, she does all the accounting, all the law, boring stuff.
All the legal stuff, yep.
Yeah.
All the admin.
And I'm managing all the staff, making sure everyone's happy with their hours, that kind of things.
Okay, so you're kind of, you're scheduling shifts, you're hiring people.
Yeah.
Maybe firing people.
Yeah. that doesn't happen too often.
Right, okay.
So how does that work, I guess, with the, I might be jumping the gun a little bit here, but with the 9-to-5 balance, that would be a bit of a toll. Like, how does that kind of work across the two?
Yeah, so when I started, since I wanted to get really deep into the details of, you know, how the a coffee shop works. Mm. I used to wake up at 6 a.m. in the morning, go to the shop to open at 6:30, and then go to work at 9. Wow. And then I go through the whole day of work, finish at 6, and then get back to the shop, and then I work another few hours until when we close, it's like 8 or 8:30 p.m.
Okay. So this is Gloria Jeans? Like this is
This is Gloria Jeans when we just get the shop.
When you first acquired it,
So after probably 6 months or 1 year, I would say, that's when I kind of put in some processes to make sure that even when I'm not there, like people can do what I do.
Sure.
Yeah, like making sure that everyone, you know.
Yeah, working. Well, I mean, that was going to be my next question. I mean, people management and kind of doing the HR and the scheduling side of things, it can get fairly demanding.
Yeah.
So what sort of process have you put in place to make sure that whilst you're not at work, things are still being done accordingly and properly, and that, you know, you could still focus on your 9 to 5.
So I make sure that, like, it's, well, talking about it now, it sounds a bit simple, but basically whenever someone, so I get everyone's availability and then make sure that I have enough staff on every single day, and make sure that, you know, I have at least 2 or 3 people available, so if someone is sick suddenly, I can just call someone up.
Right.
So making sure that I'm always covered.
Okay. It seems like you're planning ahead.
Yeah.
Is it a weekly plan or is it a monthly plan to make sure that you've got stuff on hand?
Yeah. Like for me, I like to leave it about like a month or 2 months in advance. So I would make 2 or 3 rosters.
Sure.
In advance. Just in case I'm not here, like if I'm on a holidays or something, my brother can just look at those rosters and look at send
it. Yeah, keep it all ticking. Yeah. How many people have you got working for you guys at the moment?
At the moment, there are 10 people.
Okay.
Working. So a bit of a staff there,
So like making sure everyone got the like similar amount of shifts and making sure that everyone works together, I guess, is the hardest bit of the HR of a coffee shop.
Yeah, it's being productive and getting along with each other.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So it's from that transition though. So when you transitioned from you know, doing those crazy hours, 6 a.m. to like an hour and a half after work type thing, what did that transition look like? Like, did you hire someone to fulfill some of your role? Like how did you know that things were still happening how you wanted them to happen, I guess?
Yeah, I guess it's mainly part of the planning that I do, making sure, like, if I see that in the foreseeable future, like 1 month or 2 months, I could be short in staff, then I would hire someone new or ask to see if people can cover, you know, like stay on standby for those few weeks.
Sure.
To make sure that like I'm all covered.
Mm.
And make sure that also another process that I normally do is counting money at the end of the day. That's my favorite
like
thing.
Reconciliation?
Yeah.
Of F4 sales versus cash sales. And,
yeah, okay. Exactly. So when I started, I wanted to make sure that there's a process. Like I did everything by myself. I got like some Excel sheet and make sure that it's all uploaded to one place where my sister-in-law can just like input all these details into QuickBooks.
Yep.
So after a while, I thought the staff can do it. Like I just have to prepare the Excel sheet.
Yep.
And they do it. They upload it to like a shared folder.
Sure.
And then everything can be done from there.
Okay. So having 10 staff, are they working on rotating shifts or is it 10 staff per shift?
Oh, it's 2 staff per shift.
Okay.
So it's just about rotating them.
Okay. How big is the coffee shop? Is it within a mall, so it's like a kiosk, or is it an actual proper cafe where you've got seats and tables and...
Yeah, so it's more like a takeaway kiosk kind of thing. Yeah, so it's like right inside of Flinders Street Station in Melbourne.
Okay.
Oh, it's the one inside.
The one inside.
Oh, no, actually not inside, but it's like Elizabeth Street and Flinders Street Station, like right at that corner. yeah, when people
trying
just get
to picture
off.
It.
Yeah.
So on Elizabeth Street or on Flinders Street?
Right at the corner of Elizabeth Street and Flinders Street.
Because there's a bit of a T-bone right between.
Yeah. So you have the tram at the last part, and then there's this right there on the left.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Awesome.
I know which one you're talking about. Yeah. Okay, so obviously owning a coffee shop and being a software engineer, these are the most two random things to be doing at once. So
I get this question a lot as well.
Yeah. So talk me through your logic, and it doesn't even have to be logic. I mean, just talk me through how you made the decision of going, yeah, I still want to pursue this software engineering thing, but on the side, I'm going to put up some cash or get involved in running a coffee shop.
Yeah.
What was the appeal? How'd you go about that thought process?
Yeah. So, as a software engineer, I think the thing
we drink a lot of coffee. Being in that industry.
I do that too.
Yep.
And beer.
Yeah,
I love beer and coffee. As a software engineer, we solve problems. Mm-hmm. There was one point in my career where everything was going like it's a routine, mm-hmm. I guess. And I was working at this company and like everyone was so nice, but it gets to a point where I'm like, you know, like I'm building all this amazing software for the company.
Mm.
But it still interests me, but it's not something that I love doing. Like the kind of software that I'm building, they're all very interesting, but what I love is like still, I think it comes from my parents. They're all entrepreneurs and I got affected by that.
A lot of fire in you?
Yeah. And it gets to a point where I'm like, right, I want to build something like kind of to solve a business problem, but I don't, first of all, don't have any business. I don't know anyone running a business apart from my parents, mm-hmm. but they're in Vietnam and it's like all very different. So I could just open a business to see what kind of problems a small business owner has.
Okay.
What kind of software I could build to solve this problem.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So basically, one day my brother was like, hey, I want to open a business, a coffee shop.
Younger or older brother?
Older brother.
What's the age difference between you guys?
3 years.
3 years.
Okay. Yeah.
That's not much.
So he brought the coffee shop idea. Like that was his sort of thought.
Yeah. So he was he was working in like all kind of businesses.
Yeah.
He was working for my mom in Vietnam. Then when he came here, he became a real estate agent.
Okay.
And then he got bored of that. So it was like, well, what's the next thing I could do? Like could open a some kind of business, coffee shop or like a bottle shop, whatever.
Yeah.
And when he was talking about it with me, I guess it was our ideation session on what we could do.
Mm-hmm.
Coffee shop was something that stood out.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So I guess taking a bit of a step back, thinking about your parents and you're saying your family has a bit of an entrepreneurial spirit. You could maybe talk to us about that a little bit. Like what is your parents' business, if you don't mind talking about it, I guess, and like, I guess where that sort of mentality sort of came from.
Yeah, so my parents, when I was really young, they run this textile company.
Okay.
Where they were making jackets to sell to overseas.
Yeah.
And then after that, they went into like gold and jewelry manufacturing business.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, they're still running that.
Out of Vietnam?
Yeah, in Vietnam.
So like designing as well? Or?
Yeah, designing.
Yeah, cool.
So they have a few departments in there. So they have one where someone come in, they would get something designed, and then they would produce this green mold, so to speak, out of the CAD machine. And then from there, you can produce these like pink mold. I don't know the actual
CAD as in CAD.
CAD.
A lot of engineers use that.
So and then someone would pay for any part of the process, I guess. You can come in, you can just get the CAD design, and then you can get the green mold, which is which comes from the CAD. You can get like the mass produced mold.
Okay.
So you can make the ring or whatever by yourself.
Okay.
So how does that, so I guess it's just for the listener's sake and also for mine, because I'm trying to, I can see it in my mind, but I can't piece together. So if you go from CAD, so a digital program.
Yeah.
So what's, when you say make the mold, is that like a 3D printer type thing? Or like, what is that, how does that mold get made?
Yeah, so there's this machine, and I'm probably not the best person because I'm not in the business, but very interesting to me as well. So they have this machine and they put this, a block of green sap.
Okay.
I guess. Yeah. And then like, you know, the machine, when you input your CAD design, it will cut around that.
Right.
Yeah.
So then, you insert some sort of, not necessarily a program, but almost like a script of how the machine should operate. And I'm assuming the machine is built that way, where you can kind of just program it to cut a certain way.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. Yeah.
And then that becomes your template for making the jewelry, I guess, then.
Yeah, yeah. So from there, you can't mass produce this because it's really slow. Like sometimes takes like an hour, 2 hours just to cut from that block, from the big block into your design. So from this design, you would go through another process. You would make it into a softer kind of sap so that it come out as pink sap.
Okay.
And from there, you can pour gold or silver in there.
Yeah.
And then let it cool so that it becomes like the final product.
Okay. So starting off with designing jackets to getting into jewelry.
Yeah.
Obviously, two different things, two ends of the spectrum in terms of designing, a piece of clothing or fashion into accessories. Mm-hmm. How did that all happen?
Yeah, this is very interesting as well because, again, like they're completely different things. But I think the transferable knowledge is how my parents manage their staff. Like the business side, they have to learn again from scratch.
Sure.
So they spend 1 or 2 years learning about all the intricates of making gold and jewelries.
Yeah.
What happens is like when she gets into the company, there's already some technical people in there who would, you know, get you past the initial stage.
Yeah.
And then managing people was the transferable skills, which is what I realized is very important. You know, when you're running your own coffee shop, you know, you're running your own jewelry shop, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
The people, like how you inspire the people to do the job is very important.
Absolutely.
And how you inspire them to kind of work like 100%.
Yeah, it's having good leadership in a work environment. You know, if you have a good leader, someone that can inspire you, someone that can make you feel like you're part of the process and you're adding value as opposed to just being a factory worker and just kind of pushing on with the process. I definitely understand that. Did your parents kind of fall into this business, or was it something that was inherited from their parents, your grandparents?
Yeah, so the textile clothing manufacturing company was, so they started, so back in Vietnam, back in the 70s, 80s, so everyone can kind of operate a small place, like small like factory, so to speak, like 8 to 10 people. And then I guess they built up from there. When people were still getting like, so in Vietnam back then it's really poor, just to set the scene. A lot of these companies would go to like places where they get smaller pieces of clothing, and then they would put them together to produce like a t-shirt or whatever.
Okay.
But at that time, my parents were like, they were not thinking at the small scale like that, mm-hmm. I guess. So they were going out and not getting those kind of pieces of clothing by themselves, but paying other people to kind of do that.
Sure.
And then scaling it up.
Sure.
From there. So the clothing company, they kind of build it from the ground up.
Okay. So they're self-made.
Yeah, basically.
Okay, that's really interesting, because I was just trying to get my head around how does one fall into a clothing manufacturing kind of business and then take those transferable skills onto creating jewelry and, you know, custom pieces and what have you.
Well, it's not dissimilar to like being a proficient developer and then moving into coffee and doing both at the same time.
Yeah.
I guess a question before we move on from the Vietnam sort of stuff, the parent stuff, is were you there for I guess any of these developments in the business, and did you sort of see firsthand, like, were you part of the business at all, or
well, when they had the clothing company, I was really young. I kind of saw the scale of the factory that they built. So I was amazed on, you know, like at that time, I think I was too young to kind of understand like the effort that they put into the company. But now looking back, I think what they did was like amazing. I don't think I could do it.
Big is the company? Give us a bit of a scale.
So at the height of the clothing company, so they had about 300 to 400 workers.
Wow.
And then they had this factory where it's around 1,000 meter square and 5 levels up.
Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah, so that, because they were exporting like a mass scale to overseas, so they need all that space to kind of store that.
Absolutely.
Like thinking about it now, like what they did was I think amazing for their time. So yeah, so that's kind of what I aspire to be.
Which is great. Also, not to be stereotypical, but most people that we've spoken to who have very successful parents that have done a certain piece of business for quite some years, their kids, they've always kind of manipulated or tried to have their kids work in the family business. Has that been your case as well?
Yes and no. I think my parents, especially my mom, is really understanding when she sees that I'm not, at that time, was not interested in the like the way you know, she runs the company and stuff. She allows me to pursue my own interests, which is software engineering, which I'm really grateful for, because I could a lot of my friends fall into that trap where they couldn't go, you know, learn and do what they wanted to
explore.
But now I wish, by understanding what I understand now, I wish I kind of did a bit of both to kind of grow as a person.
I mean, it's not too late to go back and take a year out and you know, help out your parents and
definitely. And like how you're sort of mentioning, looking for those opportunities between the sort of business and systems world and engineering, and how you can sort of bridge the two. I guess with that in mind, have you found any opportunities in that sort of space?
Definitely. Recently I just went back to Vietnam to kind of help them with like their business.
Mm-hmm.
I see a lot of opportunities where software can, you know, help the process much better. And these are the kind of opportunities that as an engineer I love, because I love solving problems. Like there could be inconsistencies in the reports, for example, where they were using Excel sheets a lot of the times. So there must be some software or, you know, some kind of custom solutions
to automate it.
It to make sure that you know, that the report always come out close to perfect.
Okay. So is that one of the main problems you kind of went back to streamline and solve, or were there other things?
So that is the main problem. I think what I bring to kind of to help them a bit is because they come from I guess, grassroots, like figure it out as they go.
Do it yourself type people.
Yeah, and it was a long time ago as well. So a lot of the things that they were lacking is the appreciation of how software can make a process much better. And coming firsthand from a software engineering background, that is something I could, like if someone gives me a product, especially a web app, where and then they say, this web app will do, you know, solve all your problem. I can be the one that say, no, it doesn't. Yes, it does. I can be the one that negotiate all the pricing for them to make sure that, you know, they have the best, you know, software for their, for their company.
Okay. How did you fall into software engineering? You, I mean, problem solving is a keyword that keeps coming up. But as a youngster, you don't just go, cool, I want to solve problems using software engineering. So what kind of got you into that? What was the passion or the motivation behind it?
Yeah, so I guess it was gaming.
Gaming.
I used to play a lot of games, like video games.
What were you playing? What was the game at the time?
Oof, it was Dota.
Oh yeah,
Dota. Okay. Like the original Dota, not the Dota 2 that everyone's playing these days. And a lot of MMOs.
What's MMOs?
MMOs are massively online. But basically you go online and you play with like other people.
It's like LAN, like Counter-Strike and those types of
more like World of Warcraft.
Like League of Legends type thing.
League of Legends is like Dota as well. I love those, like like playing with other people online. So that's what I that's what I guess got me really attached to computers.
Gaming. Cool.
So how did that sort of connection come from, like, from playing the games to then thinking I can do this myself, sort of thing? Like, how did that sort of happen?
Yeah. So so after I finished high school, I thought, you know, if I did anything, it must be related to computer, right? So I went enrolled in computer science. Bachelor, and then to be honest, like at first it didn't. Like I thought it would be similar, you know, we're building games and stuff. But actually, what got like the first 2 years of uni, I did terribly.
Was that back in Vietnam or here in Australia?
In Australia,
sure. So you came to Australia to study?
Yeah, I came to Australia when I was in year nine.
Okay, well, what year would that have been?
Sorry?
What year would that have been?
2002.
Okay. Did you move here with your immediate family or?
My brother moved here before me.
Okay.
1 year before, and then I follow his footstep.
Yeah.
Also because my parents thought the education system in Vietnam is like useless. So they just sent me here, and I'm grateful for that because I learned so much more here.
Awesome.
What was it like, just quick little questions, what was that transition like? Coming to Australia in that sort of age range, like in year nine, like how was that transition into school from what you were used to, like schooling wise?
Yeah, interesting. In Vietnam, like the, so we had to learn about 13 subjects in 1 year, like the whole year. Compared to here, it's like probably like six, maybe not. Yeah. So that was a big difference. And then in Vietnam, I used to go to class from 7 a.m., finish at around 5 p.m. That's the normal class.
Whoa.
And then I would go to some extra cramped classes.
You said from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. That's a class, or that's just the school?
No, that's school.
Okay. I wanted to confirm that because I was like, whoa.
So that's normal schooling.
Yeah.
And then I would go from 5 to probably 9 or 10.
Sure.
For extra classes.
Wow. It kind of makes sense then, the like thinking about your original hustle of Gloria Jeans and work. That would have set you up for that, in the mentality of being able to work those long hours and stuff like that. Like,
yeah, I never really actually think about that. I thought it was normal hour for me.
Yeah.
So when people actually say that's crazy hour, I'm like, no, it's not. So I thought, that's an interesting.
Well, I feel exactly the same. People say that to me as well. Like, crazy hours, but to me, it's just like, I don't know. I do like seven till 12.
Yeah.
And that's just like,
that's cool. Very interesting. Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
And it gets easier if you like really into it,
I guess. Totally.
It makes it much easier.
Okay. So 2002, you came here, year 9. You went to uni for how long?
For 5 years.
5 years.
Okay. So 3 years bachelor and then another 2 years to do my master course.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest, I should have like start looking for a job at that time.
Yep.
I'm not saying like education is shit or anything, but I think that unless you get like hands-on experience with whichever work or like kind of business you are trying to get into, like hands-on experience is always much better.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. That's actually a theme that we've sort of noticed through these interviews, through these, the Side Hustle show. That's a bit of a theme that we've sort of noticed, the getting out and like learning on the job type thing.
Yeah, definitely. Mm. Yeah.
So, okay. What I'm trying to understand is, so the business side of it is something that's always been quite consistent. So you've grown up, you've watched your parents build this empire. It's always been in you to do something to do with business. But you've also got this massive kind of degree and experience in software engineering. So did you go through a bit of a process of elimination in terms of what business you're looking at starting? Or did your brother say, hey, look, I'm starting this. Do you want to get on the bandwagon and help me out? How did that entire thing take place?
Yeah, the process would be cool. Yeah.
So, what happened was my brother is also sick of working for someone else.
What does your brother do?
He was working as a real estate agent.
Oh, that's right. You did mention that. Okay. Yeah. Sorry, what was your brother's name?
Andy.
Yeah. So there's Andy and Eddie.
Yeah. Oh, you said Eddie.
Wait a second. All right. Like, no.
And we also have the same surname, Wayne. So.
Shout out to Andy.
Yeah. He's also sick of working for someone else.
Mm-hmm,
and so we kind of looked around a bit.
Yeah.
Coffee wasn't the first thing that we looked at. We looked at all kind of businesses like a bottle shop. We looked at some hot chocolate places, then coffee, but not just Glory Jeans. We also looked at other things as well.
So was it always in the hospitality kind of industry?
Yeah, most of the we were really interested in that, mostly because I love coffee. But but what happened is I think he loves coffee. And then it just becomes, it just very natural for us to get into coffee.
Mm.
But the reason why we chose a franchise was because we never really have experience in running a coffee shop.
Sure.
So franchising was the best solution for us at the time.
Yeah.
Because there's a bit of a guideline that's already set up. You just kind of, you have to follow it.
Yeah.
And kind of reapply the same rules and you kind of learn to start making things a little bit your own way. But I'm guessing all the marketing, the processes and the systems are all fairly uniform.
Yeah.
So you kind of just follow it and then learn that way.
Yeah.
So
I'm keen to understand, I guess, those challenges as well from a rigid system. But before that, you mentioned before you were sort of looking into other business ideas. When you say the phrase like looking into, like what does that sort of entail? Like what does that process look like?
Yeah, so for us specifically, we went on this website where everyone's kind of selling their businesses.
Okay.
And we're just looking around because we didn't want to just start something from the ground up.
Mm.
We got a bit of extra, you know, a bit of money to invest, so to speak. So yeah, that's what we did. We went out and started looking at all the businesses before we deciding on something.
Yeah.
And this is what my brother and his wife did. They would camp outside a business for around 1 week just to see if the customer flow would be what their report says.
Okay, interesting. That's cool.
Yeah, so they would kind of gauge the sellers of the business, to kind of, you know, not believing in everything that they say.
Yeah, and your brother and his wife are doing this full time?
So my brother is doing this full time. Mm. His wife is doing like a law course.
Okay.
So I think she finishes this year or next year. So sure, she will be working in a
full. Okay, so your brother's doing kind of the full time thing, but you and his wife are kind of helping here and there to kind of relieve some of the pressure, or you know, just so provide a hand.
Was that always known? Like, was it always known that he would be running whatever business you guys chose full time? Because I wonder with that question is if the answer is yes, did that play a factor into which business to choose, I guess, because he knew he would be there?
Mm.
Mm. Yeah, we kind of always knew because I had a full-time job at that time. And his wife, when she moved from Vietnam here, she also had a job. So we always knew that he would be the main operation person.
Yeah.
So it didn't really, I guess it plays a bit into what kind of business we buy, but we can always count on him being there to run the business. And that's why we kind of split the job so no one step on each other's toes.
Sure.
But he ultimately is the deciding person for all the operations.
Sure. Things, yeah. So given that there's three people in this, is the shares, are the shares split equally?
Yeah, they're all equal.
So 33.3%.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the thing about, I guess, on that note about your brother's kind of being that main decision maker, if you, I'm just thinking about the nuances of this whole thing. So if you're like at work and you're in a scenario where you're in some sort of meeting or you just can't get your phone, and there's a staffing issue or something that's in your realm, you mentioned not stepping on each other's toes.
Mm.
How does that, does he have like the executive choice or power to be like, okay, cool, I can't get a hold of Eddie, that's what we're going to do? Or like, how do those decisions run when you've got a business that has like live decisions to be made where you might not be able to be there?
Yeah. So I guess communication is, is what's important. So we made a kind of decision that if any one of us is not free, you know, like he or I would be the one making the decision.
Yeah.
Because I believe that we would be making the best decision at the time if something happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we also offload some of the, so for my side of thing at least, for the HR bit. So I offload a bit of that to the staff as well.
Sure.
So for example, if someone can't come to work on that day, they don't have to call me or text me. They can just message another group where all the other people are in there to make sure that all the staffing issue are resolved when I'm not there. So that's something we communicate to the staff.
Mm.
And then, and so far there hasn't been any major problems.
Okay. What's the future vision for you guys? I mean, how long has this arrangement been running for with the franchise?
So we've got it for about a bit more than 2 years.
Yeah, wow, okay.
I think, And like, I love doing, you know, I love having this side business, like, so I always keep it on my toes. And when I'm working, sometimes I'm thinking about, you know, what we could do better as well. So I guess the future vision is, for me, is to kind of take what I learned from this and see if there's something I can produce, like from an engineering perspective,
right? Okay.
To kind of help other people in.
Sure.
So
it's not necessarily growing the Gloria Jeans franchise and buying out more places.
Mm.
You want to use your experience that you've learned to date to expand into other areas and other opportunities.
Yeah,
that's correct. It sounds like with a bit of a tech focus as well, of how you could do it in a sort of tech way. Yeah. Something that we haven't really discussed is how good of a developer you are. I work with Eddie, and he's an amazing developer, such a good collaborator. It's just all the facets. So, and you do like conferences and stuff like that. Should we maybe speak about that a little bit, about the, I guess, that tech side?
Yeah, sure. So I guess what happened is the business, the coffee shop, actually made me a better developer.
Just because of the caffeine intake?
free coffee.
Yeah, free coffee.
Well, not really free, you're paying for it.
Well, I assume that's free because I'm not paying cash. But when I have to work with people, especially managing other people and making sure everyone is happy, I realized that I have to speak to people in a certain way. To make sure that they do their job to make sure that everyone's happy. And that kind of skills is transferable. Even when I'm at work at the moment, Luke mentioned about collaborating. And when I'm speaking to someone I'm working with, it's not like I have to use certain tone, and I used to be terrible at it. In some previous position, when I have to manage people, I used to get angry really easily. But you know, from managing people from different background and industry, I learned how to kind of talk to people
in a more
friendly manner, kind of help them to help me.
So I'm having more productive conversations to kind of work together to solve something or to get to an end point.
Yeah, exactly. And especially when it's your business, there's more at stake than, let's say, you managing a team for someone else.
Yep.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, definitely, because in that regard, then you would be like, okay, if I get angry too easily or whatever, I might lose this employee and that's going to affect my... I have to take time to hire and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Which actually is, a bit of a point as well. Like, how do you guys find time to hire? Like, is that an operations thing? Is that your brother type role? Or, like, how does that work?
Yeah, so I do that as well. So there's always a stack of a resume at work. So whenever we need to hire someone, I would be the one that interview them. Which is interesting because it's kind of similar to what we would do at work. In my previous job, at least, where I have to hire new engineers. So seeing a person's personality just from an interview, 5-minute interview, is, I think, what's really...
You got a feel for the attitude.
Exactly.
So when you're hiring people, what are the most important, what are you looking for? What's the important traits to when you're hiring for this type of role?
Yeah, so in coffee, for me at least, what I'm really looking for is their attitude to work. Yeah. And I don't normally test for their skills. A lot of people in the industry test for barista skills. But what I realize is those skills can be trained in 2 weeks or 1 month. What's important is how they would behave.
Absolutely.
When I'm not there.
Absolutely.
Because my business relies on them behaving their best and making sure that everything works.
So their attitude type thing.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that main thing is universal across different industries. I mean, everyone can come in there with a certain type of skill, hence why they've applied for the job, but is the attitude that's going to carry them through the longevity of the position? Is the attitude that's going to allow them to grow in a position and really prove themselves and, move up or move on to another opportunity? And I'm a firm believer in that. I also do a bit of hiring myself, and attitude is something that's very critical of that, to make sure that they culturally fit.
Yeah.
They're willing to learn.
Yeah.
There's no ego or anything like that. So it's very important that you hire for attitude as well. I commend you on that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think apart from that, I realized that to get into business, I need to be able to, talk to people. Commanding is a bit of a strong word, but as a business owner or running your own team, you have to be able to talk to people like to command, you have to have a presence.
Yes.
In a room. And
definitely.
Yeah. And that's when I realized I have to kind of work on my public speaking skills, that kind of things.
Yeah. You got to capture their attention, but at the same time, you can't force them to respect you. You've got to, you know, show respect to get respect. So it's all these different things.
So how did you, so how did you action that? So you decided to fight that you needed to get those public speaking skills. So how did you go about acquiring those skills?
Yeah. So recently I went to speak at some, at Mail.js, which is a meetup for JavaScript, which is an language. And that was probably the first time I've done public speaking in a while. It doesn't, like when I applied for it, I was like scared shitless, to be honest. But then, you know, like I felt more confident. Like I'm glad that I applied to do that speech.
Okay.
And apparently it turned out much better.
I've heard from a few people that it was amazing. Yeah.
Awesome.
Thank you. I hope so. Yeah.
So I guess with that in mind, so it's like acquiring the skill. You mentioned a little way back the ability to inspire your staff. Mm. So thinking about the public speaking, commanding the room, and inspiring staff, how do you kind of culminate all that together, for lack of a better word, to get your staff to do what you want?
Yeah, I think that is just how you say something, like all that skills, right? Like it's just how you say something. But I think ultimately, you kind of have to understand every single person that you're working with, and kind of like understand what they want to be able to speak to them in a way that they will listen to.
Like, so understanding that their goals or what they're trying to do for this job, even if it might be a casual or a part-time. So if they come and tell you, hey, look, I want a casual position because I'm saving up for a holiday, that way you can position the conversation to make it seem like it's for their benefit rather than yours, or at least to show some empathy, or, you know, when you're talking about certain things, I guess
you're kind of working for them in a weird way. Like, this is not a complete thought, I just thought of it. But in a way, you're working for them because you're working to for their needs, so then they can do a better job for you. So it's like that give and take type
thing. It's a transaction, right? It's
That's why I used the word work with.
Because
I think like you're helping them to help themselves, and they're helping you as well.
Yeah.
So I think at the end of the day, is how you treat people.
Yeah.
And
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally.
What I wanted to get into, I'm not too sure how much time we've got, is managing people in any organization is probably the most stressful thing.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, what I do in my 9-to-5 is predominantly all about managing people, whether there are clients or people or teams here internally. Also with my side hustles, I'm constantly managing people as well. And that can get tricky. That can get stressful, frustrating, but it can also be quite good when you give something to someone that they need, or pretty much you see someone win and you're like, yeah, cool. We set up this plan. They followed it. And now, you know, they've exceeded my expectations, and
you enabled them to do their job, being able
to enable them or put them in a better position for them to perform better.
Yeah.
Mm.
But what I wanted to know is that majority of it does take a toll on someone. So what do you do to kind of deal with that?
Yeah. I think it depends on the person. For me, when I'm helping other people to be better selves, I guess I don't feel that's
right.
a toll feeling, you know, I don't feel that pressure at all. So even at work, like I'm always taking on the mentoring role of other developers, because I get the satisfaction from that, from seeing someone grow
I can totally empathize with that. I feel the same, like with my direct reports.
Yeah.
Like it oddly doesn't feel like work when you do the manager part of your job.
Yeah. Mm, yeah. It's kind of the empathy side of it, but yeah. you've also got to have the right personal traits to go, okay, I'm going to take time out of my day and whatever I'm doing to make sure that this person has a better start to the project they're about to do, or to remove any blockers that they might totally. Be mm. getting exposed to.
Yeah, so, totally.
What do you do to compress? What do you do to relax? What does Eddie do in his spare time?
Yeah, so recently I picked up boxing.
You picked up boxing?
Yeah.
Okay. That's boxing. Pretty aggressive. That means whatever you're doing has been pissing you off a lot. I need to punch someone.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. But yeah, it's amazing. Like, I feel so much better. But I guess it's a, like you say, it's a stress release thing as well. And by the end of the day, I don't feel stressed okay. anymore. So
that's awesome. Just like let it all out.
Yeah.
Is there a degree? Because like the first thing that I think about with the situation you're in is, like, man, I'd be longing to be at the side hustle, like at Glory Jeans, to see what's happening, to be overseeing.
Yep.
But on the flip side of that, is there a degree of calm to it because you're detached for the day? Like how do you separate that in the day?
Yeah. So for me, I always try to be 100% at what I'm doing.
Yep.
When I'm at work, I try not to think about my side businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm at the businesses, I don't try to think about work.
That so must be very difficult, though.
How do you do it, teaching? Yeah, I don't know how to do it.
I'm still trying to figure that shit out, too.
Yeah, all the slack that I sent Omar.
Yeah, so for my case, I set up... processes where people can follow and putting people in place where I can trust that they would, you know, do that.
You've got surveillance, right? You've got video surveillance. You're running a whole one screen.
That's what you got, two screens.
Yeah, that as well. But don't tell them.
With audio too.
Yeah. But unless you try to separate it, you can't really do anything.
Absolutely.
100%. So I always try to be present at what I'm doing.
But I guess having partners helps.
Yeah.
You've got two other people that will make sure things are being done, even though it might not be part of their day-to-day, but they'll definitely have your best interests at heart and vice versa if things would switch around.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I think having people that can have your back and share the same vision is very 100%, helpful 100%. In any type of hustle.
Yeah, definitely.
You mentioned something interesting that we haven't talked about at all. You said you had the notion before of when you're at work, you're at work and you don't think about your businesses. We've only talked about one business. What is that plural? Do you have multiple side hustles?
I also invest in like real estate and that kind of thing.
And what, sorry?
Real estate.
Real estate, okay.
Yeah. So I try not to put one on my back, on my ex in the
basket.
That's amazing, yeah. So is that like renting out properties and stuff like that, or?
So sometimes on the weekend I would go and check out like new development areas just to see if, I want to invest in that kind of area.
Do you have any properties that you've invested in?
Sorry?
Do you have any properties that you've invested in, or is that something that you're looking at it as a new thing?
So I got two properties at the moment, and the good thing is like it's paying for itself.
Yeah.
So once I got the loan, the rent is high enough so that I don't have to worry about that as much.
Yeah.
So I guess that's the process. It gets to a point when I don't have to think about these side businesses and I can just focus on what I do.
Yep.
But then when I do want to look at new real estate, for example, then we'll spend that time focusing on that 100%.
Yeah. So are these commercial or residential?
Residentials.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, I find I'm a bit easier to get into.
And
is that an Eddie thing, or is this an Andy and Eddie thing?
It's probably the Nguyen family thing. So, yeah, like...
The presidential family. The royals.
Well, that's amazing. Royals of Vietnam. Because there's like four wages going into that, right? Like,
it's a pretty
ingenious move.
That makes total sense.
Yeah, I learned all of that from them. they taught, like my parents especially, they taught me so much about real estate and what to look for, you know, all that kind of things, because as they are doing the main businesses before, they were doing that as well.
And I guess Andy's real estate agent background, he would know a few things and have a few connections there as well.
Yeah, definitely.
So awesome. I'm assuming that your parents have played a big role in mentorship.
Definitely.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Would there be any other people that you'd like to mention in terms of what that looked like? Or do you think it's all down to your parents that have taught you these certain things? So, for example, if you sit back and go, all right, I've learned lessons from these people, would it be solely down to your parents, or would there be any other people that you'd like to think of as mentors?
I think for me, it's a few people, like my parents are the main ones.
Yeah.
So I have a few friends, especially this guy who I know from high school. His name is Sean.
Okay.
And he quit his job as a banker a few years ago to go and create this tour company, wine tour company. So it takes people around and highly
recommend wineries.
Yeah, to wineries.
Okay.
And
he must be pretty passionate about wine, I'm assuming.
So when I asked him, this is the amazing bit. When I asked him, he knows nothing about hospitality or wineries.
Yeah.
He just been on a few wineries.
Yeah.
And so he just decided to quit his job and created this successful business.
So is he more passionate about the business side of business, or kind of the passion followed by the business?
Yeah, I think he was also sick of working for someone else.
Okay.
Yeah, and he also faced a lot of difficulties, I think, when he started. But something I learned from him is that you always kind of solve it as it comes. And I don't think there's anything unsolvable if you kind of put your mind into it and put
100%. Well, I mean, that becomes quite challenging, because sometimes if the passion is not there, how do you keep solving a problem? Where do you look for inspiration and motivation?
Yeah, that's different person from person, I guess. But I think, if you ask me, for me, it's about, and this inspiration I get is from someone else as well. So I know this guy who's he's running this really successful business in Vietnam, and all he does all day is he goes to a meeting in the morning, and then he goes to play golf. Every single day of
the
week.
That seems like something I want to get into.
So he's making his money work for him?
Yeah, he makes his money work for him.
So we're going to see Narcos Vietnam soon? Is that what he does?
That sounds amazing. From all the stuff. Actually, you Eddie told me about Rich Dad Poor Dad. That's where I've started my financial journey of being interested in learning more.
Yeah.
I'm not ready to start investing or anything right now, but I'm just dedicated to learning more about it. And I feel like that sounds like a dream to me, like more family time, more time just for all the stuff you want to do. Who knows, maybe making your money work for you and having multiple side hustles at the same time. Able to just creatively do whatever you want to do would be the dream.
Absolutely. I feel.
Yeah, definitely. And it's all because he put in some processes and make sure people works for him when he's not there. So,
is it somebody that you know? Or?
Yeah. So someone who I'm looking to work with.
Cool.
It's a pretty interesting guy.
Okay, so awesome. Software developer, a coffee shop owner, or what I call you, a
franchisee,
a barista or franchisee, or what would that fall under?
A bit of everything.
A business
owner, I guess.
Well, finding opportunities as well. Think about the real estate and stuff like that.
Well, that's it. And a real estate mogul or real estate. So you're just an entrepreneur all around, but you've still got your 9 to 5 because you're passionate about your software engineering.
Yeah.
Do you reckon you'd ever give up the 9-to-5 to focus on your two side hustles? Or three, now that this you're going to get together with Vietnam Narcos? Oh, no, I'm only kidding.
You mean golf. Coffee and golf.
Coffee and golf.
Yeah, so like I'm always looking out for opportunities where, you know, I can make money work for me,
wow.
I guess. Mm. And to do that, like I'm building... like I'm putting in the hard work at the moment to kind of hopefully one day step away from software engineering as a technical, you know, as a technical person and get to a level where I can run my own software engineer company to kind of not just help myself, but help other people solve their problem.
Awesome.
Because at the end of the day, I'm still a problem solver and like to keep it that way.
That's amazing. I feel like I need to set up a separate session with you to learn, like lead some more from you and start to think about other collaboration forms of that as well.
Yeah, I'm always open. Like, definitely.
Hey, look, mate, we're starting to wrap up, and obviously we would love to have you here for another hour. So I'm pretty sure you can teach us some more lessons about how you do things and how you operate your different side hustles. What I wanted to know is, you've mentioned you'd like to leave software engineering as a 9-to-5 and start up your own company. But is that truly what you're passionate about, or is it the business that you're passionate about? Where does Eddie's passion lie? Because it seems like business has been the main driver of these things whilst you've got this software engineer 9-to-5. But what is your actual passion?
Sounds a bit shallow, but I would have to say it's money. I would love to get to a point where I'm comfortable. Doesn't have to be like, you know, crazy rich. But to a point where I'm comfortable to take care of my, you know, my immediate families, making sure that everyone's comfortable, and then contribute back to the world, like through any, you know, like business or services that I can provide. So I'm not sure if that answers your questions.
Look, it definitely does. What it tells me is that you enjoy the chase. You enjoy the chase of trying to figure something else out, figuring it out, and then kind of figuring out what to do with it afterwards. So pretty much is what you're doing is hunting it, living the journey, and then moving on to the next thing.
Yeah.
Would that describe it?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, whilst making shitloads of money in between, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. So I guess you can put it that way as well. Yeah. And I guess because I'm really, what's the word? I guess I'm really antsy.
Okay.
If I don't do anything.
Okay.
So all of these side hustles are creating, you know, like something for me to do. And it's, I find that so much fun. And it's not like it's a hustle. It's not like it's a hassle.
Yeah.
We have to do this kind of thing.
It's interesting, interesting hear you say it in this way, because I feel like I'm similar in the regard of solving the problem is more important than what the problem is, I guess, or what's what it is, meaning... I've struggled to, I guess, feel passionate for anything in my professional life at all, until this podcast. But I'm kind of also content with just solving problems and moving on. I haven't figured out the money part yet, but it sounds like you're on that journey as well of like I agree, like keeping things busy, been working on things, and then, and it like allowing you to just keep moving, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. And like along the way, like so like coffee or real estate or whatever, it's not the only kind of business I've been looking into.
Yeah.
So like each kind of industry gives me some kind of knowledge about what I can, you know, apply or into other industries.
It's a journey of education as well. You're educating yourself, but you don't want to go and take a business course. You want the practical experience.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. I love the transferable skills notion, because you can literally transfer it to whatever and do your own spin on it, which is really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Andy. Not Andy. Andy's Eddie. Your brother.
Not my brother. Eddie's brother.
I know. I'm looking at you, but I'm saying it's his brother. Eddie, man, look, it's been awesome having you here. Like I said, would love to stay around and talk for long, but we got to get out of this place at some point. Do you have any socials or any, if anyone wants to find you or talk to you
how
or
do
anything
we,
like that?
Don't do.
How do we reach you?
How do we find you? Tell us.
Yeah, so I have a personal website.
Yep.
It's Eddie, E-D-D-Y.
Not Andy, Eddie.
Yeah, Eddie. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So I have a personal website, eddie.works.
.works, okay.
Yeah, eddie.works and yep. Got how... information on how to reach me via LinkedIn or Facebook.
Awesome.
And, awesome. Do you have a specific Gloria Jean's social or anything that you'd want to plug? Or
because they manage, Gloria Jean's, they manage their own site. So if you want to reach me personally, yeah, you can go to my personal website and see my journey up there.
Yeah, or we can head across Elizabeth Street, corner of Elizabeth and Flinders. And
get are there any coffee specials running at the moment that you want to promote?
Yeah, well, if you go there and you say you're Eddie's friend, you always get 10% off.
Okay,
so when this finally goes big, we're going to make Eddie a bit bankrupt.
What if I go, I know Andy and Eddie, but I get 20% off?
Yeah, I have to ask Andy because this is my special. Yeah, but feel free to drop by.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for joining us. It's been an amazing adventure. On this.
It's been very insightful.
Thank you for having me. Yeah. No, it's been fun.
Thank you very much.
Awesome.